Looking ahead, we talk all things Predators with Chris Mason, the former NHL goalie and their current broadcaster on those Predators games. My experience in the NHL Situation Room on the Frozen Frenzy night. Hot starts for the Capitals and Wild and the Dallas Stars and Florida Panthers, who are going to Finland, along with my co-host, Sean Rourke. All coming up on the NHL At the Rink podcast.
NHL At the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Sean, we're catching you just before you're headed to Finland with the Dallas Stars and the Florida Panthers. We got a new episode here of the NHL At the Rink podcast. How are you doing, pal?
I'm doing great, man. I cannot wait to go to Finland. But first, we're going to do a fantastic show. We have Chris Mason on from the Nashville Predators broadcast, talking about one of the most surprising teams in a not-so-good way so far early in this season. Plus, we're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff on the podcast, which is presented to you by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Can we talk about myself first?
Of course, we always do.
All right, that's good. Because I had a pretty cool experience Tuesday night in the Situation Room up in Toronto. I went up there, and I hope everybody listening read my live blog from there, Sean. So a little pop to that as well. But I covered the Frozen Frenzy, the 16-game night from the Situation Room. And, I mean, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, watching the flow of the room, watching the way it works, that room, from all the details of that room, which I documented all in the blog, was so interesting. It was a unique experience for me because I've never done it. And on a 16-game night, there was one challenge, one goal review. That's it on a 16-game night, which was the Frozen Frenzy. But it was very cool to be up there and to experience and see the flow of the room, see how that room works on a big night of hockey. And, Sean, it was a big night of hockey.
It's the best night of hockey. Everybody plays. You have to be interested because your team's playing. Plus, there's other storylines. And for those that don't know, that might be casual listeners, the Situation Room is in Toronto where everything is reviewed, goals, scoring plays, supplementary discipline, all that good stuff. And Dan put a damper on all of it.
Well, I don't think I put a damper on it. In fact, they invited me back. Chris King, executive VP of Hockey Ops, who helps run that room up there, told me I'm welcome back anytime because they had what they termed a quiet night. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you love hockey, you're not always going to get the chance, but what a place to watch hockey. And on a 16-game night, and Sean, I want to go to the Frozen Frenzy here for a second because I love it. Just like you said, everybody who is a hockey fan is interested on that night because your team is playing. It's a great night as a one-off, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't love that we only had one game on Monday and only one game on Wednesday, but I get it because everybody played on Tuesday. I think it's a great thing as a one-off, but it's not something, and we're not doing it. I think it's the only 16-game night this season.
It is.
So it's not something that you want to see on a consistent basis because you want more games on those other nights too. But for a one-off, it's just a terrific night of hockey. And there were some great goals. There were some great saves, obviously, and just some good storylines coming out of that night. It was a terrific night of hockey, but as a one-off, not as a consistent thing. Which it's not.
No, but I could see it a couple more times a year. I think there's, you know, ways to play back-to-backs. And I don't mind the one-game night. I think the one-game night's awesome, too. It's like Monday Night Football, which is now a two-game night, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
Or Thursday Night Football, you know, you have the spotlight. And I think that's awesome as well for those that are hockey fans and not fans of a specific team. So I'm all for it. I'm all for the opportunities it presents, you know, the whip around and the ability, you know, to use the technology to kind of swing from game to game. There's no dead period. And I think that's important, right, for younger viewers. For me or you, it may be not as important. Maybe we want the 20-minute break so we can do something else or just rest our eyes or rest our brains. But that's not the way the world is anymore for the youngins. They like constant stimulation, and there is no more constant stimulation than the Frozen Frenzy.
Yeah, you needed an 18-screen night. You had 16 games. Well, they weren't all going on at the same time, but let's just assume they were. 16 games, the ESPN2, and then my live blog.
Yes, but that's not a TV screen.
No, you got to read it, though. Anyway, listen, the first game of that night, let's get to – we got to get to the Washington Capitals here, right? So – and we're going to have Chris Mason on talking Nashville Predators shortly. So definitely stay tuned for that. But, Sean, the Washington – they played the first game that night, the Washington Capitals and the Philadelphia Flyers. And Washington came out with a 4-1 win. The next night they were laid the only game, and Washington won that one 6-3. They've won five games in a row. They're 5-1. They're averaging over 4 goals per game in their 6 games, 4.33 goals per game. You remember last year they got into the playoffs with a minus 37 goal differential. They were 29th in the league in scoring, and they kind of got in because nobody else could in that Metropolitan Division. And now the Washington Capitals are off to this terrific start. It's not fueled by Alex Ovechkin. He's doing his thing. He's got a couple goals, but Tom Wilson's got 5. They got 6 players with 5 or more points. The Capitals, I don't know if it's just a hot start or if it's something they can ride, Sean, but it's one of those things where you just got to ride it as long as you can. But the style of play seems to be repetitive, which means it is something that they hopefully will be able to continue throughout the course of this season on a consistent basis. They're not going to win like this on a consistent basis, but if they can have the style of play stay consistent, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and Pierre-Luc Dubois has been decent for them, and he's one of the guys, he said, you know, these are the waves you want to ride for as long as you can. Remember a couple of years ago, the Devils went on a pretty big run early on, and it assured them of the playoffs.
Yeah.
They were able to survive not being quite as good later. The points you bank now aren't going to get you into the playoffs, but they're going to save you when you go through injuries or a downward spiral. You know, you're getting ahead of the pack now, and I think that's important. And all of their imports have helped, and that's not always the case. You know, we're going to talk about the Nashville Predators, who remade their team in a major way, and those pieces haven't gelled yet. In Washington, they've gelled. Washington's a lot of effort hockey. That's what they do.
Yes.
And if everybody's going in the same direction, to use a good hockey hockey cliche, they're a really hard team to beat.
You know, and I think it's so needed, too, in that division for Washington to be a competitively good team, a consistent team. Because remember, going into the season, we were talking, this could be a three-team division with the Devils, the Rangers, and the Hurricanes. And even there were some questions about Carolina, and Carolina's been fine. They've actually been pretty good, right? They've won 3 of their last 4 games. They've only played 6 games. So you look at the standings and you look at Pittsburgh has got one more point, as we talk on Thursday, than Carolina. But Pittsburgh's played 3 more games, and they've been vastly inconsistent, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Columbus, Philadelphia, I do question the Islanders, but you needed a top 4, not a top 3. And Washington looks like the team, again, we're talking on October 24th, that looks like it's ready to bust out and be that, stay there really as that top 4 team. And it's needed, Sean. It's needed because in the other side, right? I mean, you've got, I think, you know, what we thought was a clear top 4. Ottawa's jumped into the mix there. Buffalo's starting to play a little bit better. The Red Wings got to get their game in order, and they've started to a little bit. It's way deeper on the other side in the other division, the Atlantic Division. But I think the Metro, with Washington playing the way they're playing, it kind of feeds a little bit more competition in that division.
It certainly does, and this is what you want for Alex Ovechkin, right? He scores into an empty net last night, and I believe he's 40 away now.
He's got 2.
From Wayne Gretzky. So you want that for Alex Ovechkin. You want it for Sidney Crosby, and I don't know if they're going to get it. They need to get some better goaltending if they're going to have that happen. But you want both those teams to be competitive as these two iconic players ride into the sunset.
And you think about it, too. Washington made sure that they were trying to do right by Ovechkin, and by extension, John Carlson, too. Let's not forget about him. I mean, the guy is still a minute-munching defenseman, and he's been, you know, I mean, he's a legend in Washington. Maybe not at the same level as Alex Ovechkin, but he's arguably the best defenseman in franchise history right now. They added, you mentioned Dubois, Andrew Mangiapane, Matt Roy is, you know, he has not played, he's hurt, right? Logan Thompson. I mean, our Tom Galitti wrote about it, right? The Capitals and the additions they made, and how those additions, again, small sample size, 6 games, but they've hit, and, you know, They wanted to stay competitive, and they made additions in the offseason to stay competitive, improve their competitiveness. Jacob Chychrun's another one, right? Improve themselves from last year. Because last year, Sean, let's be honest, they were a playoff team, but they really weren't a playoff team. They got in, like I said, with a minus 37 goal differential by a tiebreaker, and then they got smoked in the first round. But the style of play they have and the infusion of extra talent that they have makes them a better team. And you need to bank the points now because you don't want to be chasing them later. Whereas the Pittsburgh Penguins have played 8 games. They got 7 points. They're not banking the points now. There's struggles in net. We don't know who their number one goalie is. Defensively, it's been a bit of a mess. It's different in Pittsburgh.
It is different. And I still think it's going to get better. I mean, to me, that team has to be better than it is. And look, they got a huge test tonight. You talk about two teams that are looking to find their game for tomorrow night. I'm sorry, they play on Friday. It's Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers and Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And they're going head-to-head for the 14th time, I think, in this series. And you know, Connor McDavid said today at practice he still gets excited about it. But he might be more excited about the fact that they're going to play together at the Four Nations. But this is much like last year for Edmonton when they played in the outdoor game against the Calgary Flames. This is a really important game early on.
By the way, let's also sidebar this and say Connor McDavid was asked today at the morning skate for the Oilers Thursday, who should captain Team Canada at the Four Nations face-off, him or Sid, basically. And Connor, smartly and rightly, I think, said Sidney Crosby, and it's not even a question. And Sid is still that way. Just wanted to point that out, that was still talked about. Four Nations face-offs coming up in February. Still got time, but there's a lot of scouting going on with that, and we're actually going to be doing some roster projections shortly, right, Sean? Those are going to be coming out Can't talk enough about roster projections.
No, Monday is 100 days away. Yeah, everybody says it's so far away, but it's coming fast.
Yeah. Monday is also the night that Steven Stamkos goes back with the Nashville Predators, goes back to Tampa Bay to play the Lightning, and we talked about that with Chris Mason, and that interview is going to be coming up here shortly. But got to also, if we're going to give Washington their due credit, Sean, we've got to give the credit to the Minnesota Wild as well, because they were another one of those bubble teams as we talked preseason. And here are the Wild as we are talking right now on Thursday, 4-0-2, and they have not trailed for a single second this season. They lost a game in overtime. They did not trail at all in that game, but they lost it in overtime. They lost a game in a shootout, which is another one. They did not trail in that one either. Filip Gustavsson has been, obviously he scored the goalie goal, but in net he's been awesome. Kirill Kaprizov has been terrific. Marco Rossi playing the role of number one center looks like a fit for right now between Zuccarello and Kaprizov. Similar to Washington, you wonder, is it sustainable? But the way they play looks like it's a consistent approach to the way they play. And if that's the case, they're going to win more than they lose because they have enough talent. And maybe they are a team that can sneak up on some teams and maybe take Nashville's spot in the playoffs that we all assume Nashville would have. Who knows? It's still early.
And that's one of the concerning parts about Nashville's start. They only have 2 points so far this season, and there are teams getting away from them that we didn't think were going to be a part of the equation, plus the teams that we did. Look, Winnipeg's undefeated. They're 6-0 right now. So there's already a 10-point difference there. That's huge at any time in the year. 10 points is a lot of points to make up. I think Minnesota, you know, is really good. I think Kaprizov is going to be a Hart Trophy candidate. And I want to say, and I would have to go back and look at my vote, that he got a vote for me in the preseason ones that we did. There weren't many that gave him points, but I think he's at that level in his career where he is, you know, if Minnesota is going to have any kind of relevancy, it's going to be at the hands of Kaprizov because there's not a ton of offensive help there aside from him. So if they're going to be a playoff team, he's going to have to be a monster.
Yeah, listen, no question about it. He's the best player on the team. He's the most dangerous player on the team. But then you drop behind him, and that was the big concern for me heading into the season, was when you drop behind Kaprizov. But we're seeing really good things out of Marco Rossi right now. Matt Boldy looks like he's a budding star in this league. Matt Zuccarello is still performing at a high level. Joel Eriksson Ek, he's just a complete player, right? So they have maybe more there than we were giving them credit for. And the amazing thing about it, Sean, is they're doing it at a cap deficit of almost $15 million because of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. That hurts them later on, I think, more than it hurts them right now, because you want to add something to this team, and I don't know that they have the ability to do that, but you bank them when you can, and right now they're 4-0-2 and they haven't trailed yet.
Yeah, and all of those guys you mentioned are young, right? So they're on they're on contracts that aren't quite as onerous. Kaprizov's coming up soon, and he's going to break the bank. That's going to be a huge contract. And Faber, when he comes up, the defenseman, has been an unbelievable revelation, and you know, is playing like a number one, and he's going to have to get paid like a number one. So they still have headaches, but when those two contracts come off the board, they have a little bit more flexibility. But you're right, they are, as the year goes on and injuries start to pile up and you know, relief is needed, they're going to be hamstrung.
Yeah, they're hamstrung by that, no question. We teased it before. Chris Mason, he's an analyst for the Predators, former NHL goalie, played for the Predators on FanDuel Sports Network right now in Nashville. He joined us to talk a lot about the Predators and a little bit about the smaller goalies in the league, or normal-sized goalies in the league. Here's that interview with Chris Mason. Chris, thanks for hopping on with us. Now, we don't do a lot of video on this podcast. It's really audio, but if our listeners could see your setup, and you said you were in the garage, this is the best setup we've seen for a guest on our podcast. And I just want you to describe what your setup is. I mean, let alone your mic is impressive, but behind you, it looks incredible.
Well, I just, you know what? I had fun doing this because Hal Gill and I decided to start a podcast, and there wasn't really any room in the house to do it. So I'm like, you know what? I love being in the garage. I'm going to go out in the garage and I'm going to put all my, you know, stuff. I don't hang any like Pred stuff or hockey stuff. There's hardly anything in the house. So I'm like, this is perfect. I get to do this. And I watched about 100 YouTube videos, get the lighting and all the equipment, how to hook it up. I'm trying to, you know, produce our podcast, the Bag Chucker podcast. And so this is what I got. I got my workbench that, as you can see, it's not that roughed up. So there's not a lot of work that goes on there. It's more of a table than anything. And then I got the fridge, the fridge with all the stickers, and I just hung all my other stuff. And these trophies have been out here since I moved in here, which is about 4 years ago. I'm like, I don't want to put them in my house. So I'm like, you know what? Put them on top of the fridge, and now you can see those. So yeah, just a fun little thing, and we're having fun with it, and it's a good space to be creative and talk hockey and all the other things.
Chris, the workbench may not have gotten much use, but it looks like that refrigerator's pretty well worn.
Yeah, that is. It's got a lot of red meat up here and dog food and all the things, and it's got a lot of beverages in the other part too, so it definitely gets its use for sure.
Well, no question about it. It looks great. It looks like you're having a blast doing it. Like you said, it's the Bag Trucker podcast with you and Hal Gill. You're having a lot of fun, but the Predators don't seem to be having a lot of fun, so let's get into that a little bit. We on a national level are surprised, I think, about this start. Are you surprised by this start, or is this something like when you're working in these guys, it's not so easy sometimes to work in guys who've had long careers in other markets?
You know what? I think everybody was surprised and then almost shocked, you know, how long it went, because you know there's going to be an adjustment time. You know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, different things that, you know, we don't see from the exterior. Everybody from the outside looking in, they're not just going to magically show up and be awesome, you know, the team on paper. But what has been surprising is this is a team that when you look at it, they should be able to, you know, not play great and still win a couple hockey games here and there. But it's taken a while. And I think, you know, it's so much more magnified at the beginning of the season. Everybody's, you know, talking about the Predators. It's been a while since they've had that much fanfare and excitement around the team. And then all of a sudden they come out and it is, you're 0-5 and you're sitting in a situation like, oh my God, this is what's going on here. But you know, you're going to go through these swings, and they were able to put that, down a really good game against the Bruins, which I think was absolutely massive at this point, because you go 0-6, you know, it's just, nowhere to go but up from that point. But they're starting to get it, and I think more so than ever, the first five games they just didn't look like they were supposed to look. I think last year the team had such a great run, you know, all some great storylines around it, when they, you know, Barry Trotz canceled the U2 concert, and then they went on that huge 18-point game streak or whatever, and they were just a fun team to watch. They worked their butts off every single night. They just competed, whether they won or lost. They were the hardest working team on the ice every night. And I almost feel like when you add Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, Brady Shea, there's almost a feeling like, oh, this is great. Yeah, we're a hardworking team. We're relentless, but maybe we don't have to play quite as hard because we're better and we can make plays now, and we're going to score a lot of goals and we're a little bit fancy. I got that sense, and it wasn't a work ethic thing. It was just maybe changing the way that they played and changing their identity a little too much. And they got back to it against the Bruins. And that's what they look like. I feel like in the room that obviously they've got a lot of quality character people and great leadership. It was almost like they said, okay, enough's enough. The joke's over. Let's go. Let's everybody play the way that we play. And it's one game, but it was the first game that I've seen the team that, you know, we expect to see on the ice every night.
So I have to ask about Steven Stamkos. Everybody tuned in, obviously, for the opener, and then again a couple of days later when they played the Lightning, and have made all kinds of assessments off of that. He's played six games and he's had one goal. Is there reason for concern, or are the chances coming and it's just a cold snap that everybody goes through maybe at the worst possible time for somebody looking to establish themselves?
He's getting the chances. And that's the thing that, you know, we try to make, obviously we got to point out all the bad stuff, but also the stuff that you have to look past the tough start, and you have to look, you know, foreshadowing into what is to come. And, you know, the analytics and the eye test match in this one, he's getting a ton of chances. He's getting a lot of really good scoring chances. It's just a matter of time before they start going in. He's been robbed, snake bitten a little bit, on the power play especially. I think 5-on-5 has been maybe the biggest concern with that line, because Andrew Brunette really wants Marchessault and Stamkos together. He split them up briefly just to try to, you know, kickstart that second line, and maybe the second and third line, put them back together with Colton Sissons. But they're having trouble really getting anything sustained 5-on-5, finding who the right centerman is. Andrew Brunette even put Stamkos at center to start a game, and just to see if he could get a different look there. But again, it's tough. Andrew Brunette's system, it takes a while for players to get it. He really expects the guys and wants you to anticipate offense on possession in the defensive zone. And when I talk to players, I like, what's so hard about this? Well, you know, what takes so long to get this? And a lot of the guys say that it's almost, you have to forget almost everything you've learned in the defensive zone, leaving, you know, once you get possession to wait and you support your defenseman and the centerman comes underneath and in between. Andrew Brunette wants to play fast. He believes he's got, you know, defensemen, Roman Josi, Brady Shea, all these guys. Every defenseman can move the puck nowadays. So all these guys, when you anticipate possession, you have to go. He wants you to cheat. He wants you to blow out of the zone, and he wants a defenseman to move it quick so you can move up the ice quick. And it takes time to, honestly, it's a thought process at first, and guys hesitate a lot. And once you hesitate, you know, you're kind of, the defense is caught up to you, and you don't have the space that you can create if you're anticipating, you know, in stride and able to push out defensive teams and defensemen and stretch out the neutral zone. So they've had trouble with that, but it's coming. It's getting better every single game. And like I said, last game against the Bruins, which I felt was their toughest opponent in terms of wanting to play the style of play, getting to the net, you know, playing fast. The Bruins are one of the best at clogging up the neutral zone, really disrupting any flow that you want. And they had a really strong game. So that was promising. And that line and those two in particular, Stamkos and Marchessault, look like they're starting to pick it up a bit more.
Well, and I guess that's what I meant by sometimes you throw these two guys in who have been in one market for a very long period of time. And, you know, for Stamkos, under one coach and one system and one style of play for a very long period of time, preseason reps are not enough. You've got to get into the flow of it. And maybe now what you're seeing is them finally starting to feel a little bit of the flow of it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Dan. I think, you know, training camp, I mean, that's the NFL. They don't even barely play their stars anymore. They do a couple series. The guys get hurt. You're not even playing with your whole team or your line mates. You're playing against, you know, whatever kind of lineup. It's necessary, but it definitely means different things for different players. And I think for, you know, when you're talking about guys like Stamkos and Marchessault, it just simply isn't enough. You know, you're not even, you know, going in meetings with the team at that point, and you get a couple preseason games, and you got to get into the regular season. The games mean more when you're playing for real, and it does take time. It took this team a lot of time last season to get it. You know, it really did. And it's something, you know, it's kind of funny because you think like, well, you know, it's a system. Just tell the guys and they should be able to execute it. What's so hard about it? And you see a guy like Brady Shea who's come into is from the defenseman perspective. You know, he's such a great player. And Roman Josi went through this last year. They just get the puck and they want it. They could carry it and skate it up the ice every time if they wanted to. I mean, Josi led the league in zone exits and entries a couple years ago before Andrew Burnett got there. But he wanted Josi. He said, listen, we want to play fast. I know you can do this. And believe me, if you can do it once in a while, you mix it in, change it up. But I want you to get the puck. I want you to move it to our forwards that are anticipating and leaving the zone. And then jump up with the play. You're going to get the puck back. Trust me. You're going to get a lot of points. You're going to have a lot of offense that way. Mm-hmm. And it took him a long time to get that. You could just tell he was trying so hard to do it. Finally, he got it. And he had a lot of success. And Brady Shea's kind of going through that same transition. But it is tough because all those guys, Marchessault, Stamkos, who you mentioned, Dan, and Brady Shea have been with the same team, same coaches, and same kind of environment for so many years. That's a major, major overhaul. That's a major change in a player's life and a person's life, not just on the ice. Your whole world gets turned upside down. So these guys are going through a lot right now on and off the ice, but you know, they're where they want it to be, and hopefully it'll turn out. I know it will. Just a matter of time before it all comes together.
Chris, what do you see from UC Soros? Last year, it seemed he struggled a little bit in the numbers. Again, this year, it seems that way. I know there's some behind-the-scenes analytics that suggest the struggles haven't been as big, but obviously you pay a lot of attention to goaltenders, and I'm curious what you see from him so far.
Yeah, I think last season was maybe his most up and down season for whatever reason. And I guess, I don't know, a lot of guys have certain trends at certain points in the season. He's been a perennial slow starter. I thought coming into training camp, and you know, he talked about the preseason, but the games that he played, he looked phenomenal. I'm like, oh wow, he's ready to go. And then he got hurt in one, and they missed the opening night. But I feel last season, and he had a lot of distraction. He had a contract. You had Yaroslav Askarov, who's one of the best goalie prospects in the game right now, coming up. And there's a lot of talk about him being the heir apparent. And, you know, maybe depending on how things go this season, this was last season, they might move UC Saros. And if they don't do it at the deadline, they'll do it in the summer. If they're not able to get him signed to an extension, they were able to do that. Askarov wanted to, you know, get a new team and a change of environment. He got that. So I just feel like he's clear of those things. And those do weigh on players. And certain players definitely carry that in a different way. And again, this season, I was expecting him to come, you know, out of the gates, guns ablaze, and just because of how he looked in training camp. And you guys know, when you watch, if you watch somebody closely night in and night out, there's just a look that they have, especially goaltenders, that they're confident, the way that they're following the puck, the way that they're making saves, the types of goals they're giving up. And he hasn't played bad. The Predators have given up a ton. They're one of the, you know, the teams that have given up the most odd man rushes to this point in the season. But the one thing that he hasn't been able to do, which when he gets on and he gets to the level that he's capable of getting to, he's able to sustain it for long, long stretches of time. And that's what makes the great goalies great in this league, the Hellebuck's, the Vasilevskis, the Saroses, Shesterkins, those types of guys. But he hadn't got there. And I thought last game against Boston, a prime example, Predator score the first goal, all of a sudden next, and this has been a theme early in the season, they give up a breakaway, and it's Pasternak on a breakaway. Those have been going in. You know, not bad goals, but just you're not getting the big save at the right time. He makes that save. He made a bunch of those against Boston. They go on to win the hockey game. So him is, you know, the same as the team. He hasn't played bad. I think the team had played bad. until that Boston game, but he hadn't won them a game, you know, and that's that he's more than capable of doing it. But I felt he was the first star in that Boston game. So we'll see if, you know, that's going to turn around as well, but he had a very strong game last game, but just, yeah, for whatever reason, he's had a lot of slow starts in his career.
Sidebar to Staros, and as a former goalie yourself, I think you played it late. You're about 5'11", 6 foot, right?
Yep.
Staros is 5'11". The other night we had Dustin Wolf and Alex Nedeljkovic both listed, and I put up bubble quotes on this one at 6 foot, but I think they're maybe, you know, maybe closer to 5'10", 5'11". Are we seeing a little bit of a return of the smaller, the small-ish goalie? Because right now, it was always, for the last several years, it was like, well, a goalie's got to be 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", 6'7", right? Hey, maybe not so much, right?
You know, it's funny because I've noticed that, and we watched Alex Lyon, and he looks a little smaller. They say he's 6'1", but he's another one of those guys too. And I asked about that. I asked our stats guy, Jacob Underwood, who's awesome. He looked up a bunch of guys in Wolf, and I think you're seeing, you know, the guys that are smaller, like Saros, he's probably the most technically sound goaltender I've ever watched. I mean, I watch clips of Wolf. He's exciting the way that he follows the puck and tracks the puck. And I think the way when the game gets more east-west, I think you need that athleticism. Guys are so good now. It's so hard to read plays. The knowledge of the shooter, the goalie, the trends, the patterns within the game on both sides, shooter and goaltender. At the end of the day, you have to be able to read the play, read the puck, and react. You know, I watch a guy like UC Saros. I watch him every night. His ability to react to a play, it's one thing. I can read a play, but my body, it's a process. I have to say, okay, he's doing that. Now I have to tell my body, and my body does it. You know, you're talking 1 second. He's instantaneous. And, you know, the smaller goalies, obviously, like Wolf as well, and some of these guys, that where they have trouble and where they get exploited a little bit is when there's a lot of traffic and you're just going down to block and fill space. And then you have all the 6'2", 6'3", 6'7" goaltenders who now all of a sudden seem to be super athletes, which is incredible as well. These guys are so big and they're able to move so well. But, you know, there's the pros and cons. A lot of big guys, when they're moving, their holes are bigger too. And when they have to, you know, close up and put their arms together and you know, stop a puck from squeaking through or bring their right leg in, if somebody's trying to go five hole, it's a lot longer for these guys to close up those holes. But we are seeing, I guess, the smaller guys, or maybe I call them the more normal size guys, getting back in the league.
Right, and, exactly.
Yeah, and they're fun to watch. But the way watch when you watch these guys, their ability to read and react to plays and their ability to watch the puck come off the stick, they just read the play so well, and the reaction and the way that they're connected to the puck and the play is extremely fun to watch, especially for a goalie nerd like me.
Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, and I don't want you to sell yourself short, because I saw the video of you the other day as the emergency goaltender in practice. You held your own, little furnace face going on.
Oh yeah.
But expected. But does it give you a different perspective to be able to do that, to be able to stand on the ice? And look, it's not 100%. I don't think many guys are going 100% in practice, but it's still, I would imagine it gives you a different viewpoint of how you analyze some of these players.
Honestly, it's a great reminder of how talented, how hard these guys work, how fast the game is. It is crazy. I get to go between the benches sometimes, and when I'm doing the color analysis for FanDuel Sports Network, and that's, you know, it we sit up in the stands, and we, even though I played the game, you know, you stand, you go, you're up there for almost every game. It looks easy. You know, it looks like, oh, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? That is the, I love that I still have the opportunity to do that once in a while. And I'll never pass up an opportunity to do it, because of your point is it reminds me how good these guys are, how hard they work, the speed, and how hard it is to make plays. There's no time. You think you have time when you watch up above and you can see plays develop because you know the patterns and you know kind of what's supposed to happen and where it's supposed to go. But that is, I'm just so very fortunate to be able to do that. And it is a great reminder of just how good the players in this league are, because I think we all like to say, you know, and fans sometimes too, like to, you know, rag on guys and this and that. And, you know, oh, why didn't he do this or why didn't he do that? And now I know it's a split second reaction. It just shows how talented and how, you know, much talent we have in this game. And it's, in my opinion, it's the best that it's ever been. Because every guy from, you know, the first line to the fourth line, they can all skate. They've all got skill. Obviously, you know, they play different roles and everyone's got, you know, different skills. And then there's the superstars. But, man, it's impressive. And I was very fortunate to get that perspective.
Wanted to go back with you on Stamkos, because I think it's on Monday, October 28th. They go to you guys. The Predators go to Tampa. I always wonder about this. Guys who have been in a market for so long, do you think that, As much as you talked about the system and adjusting to the way Andrew Brunette wants him to play, wants everybody to play, the closure of going back to Tampa, getting the celebration that he's going to get in Tampa is needed for a guy to be able to move on. He has not gotten that closure yet. You know, I mean, maybe he has a little bit mentally. He's moved on. He's on a different team. But going back, feeling that, you know, embrace, will that allow Steven Stamkos to maybe get a little bit more comfortable too? What do you think?
Well, that's a great point. And I'll share my experience with that. And it's nothing even close to what Stamkos is likely to be going through when he goes back to Tampa. I played for the Predators for 6 years. I was in their farm system for 4 years. And I got traded to St. Louis in the summer. You know, sometimes when you get traded, it's a good thing and a bad thing. And I was coming off not a great year. So I was really happy about the fresh start. But, you know, you also have those emotions where I still really love Nashville. I didn't want to get traded. So as much as you say, hey, this is great, it's exciting, I'm in a new team and you're getting adjusted. And I got adjusted with St. Louis. I loved it there. It was awesome. Great teammates, great organization, fans, all those things. But I remember the first game I came back to Nashville, and I've never had this really, but the night before, you're flying in, you're a visitor, you know, in your own home, you know, and especially right. For Stamkos, a place he's played 16 seasons. He grew up, he was a kid. He was a kid when he got drafted there. You know, he grew up his entire life. He started a family there, and he just everything he's experienced in the game has been with that organization. He's won Stanley Cups, lifelong friendships. I mean, this is just going to be, I think it's going to be extremely emotional. It was so weird walking into the building here in Nashville, and this is only after 6 years, as a visitor. You go in the visiting dressing room, you're seeing everybody you see, and, you know, it's a happy, you know, sad type of thing. But to your point, Dan, I think he needs to do this to turn the page a little bit, because the next time he goes back there, it won't even be close. This one is going to be tough. It's going to be emotional. The fans are going to be emotional. Everyone in that building, we're not doing that game, and I'm so disappointed in that, but at least I get to watch it. I'll watch it on TV. Mm-hmm. But he is going to go through one of these things that nobody can really prepare you for. I can tell my story, and, you know, every other guy that's done the same thing can tell theirs, but until you experience it, it's almost like having a kid. Oh, it's great. But until you're in the delivery room and you see your child, you don't know what's coming right now. And I think it's going to be a special, happy, sad, all the emotions, all the feels moment for him, but one that is necessary, like you said, to kind of turn the page and say, all right, I got that out of the way. Let's go. It's go time. And it's going to be a big night for that as well.
Will it also be a unifying point for the team? Like, he's theirs now. They're going to have to fight for him in that game. They're going to have to protect him. They're going to have to go through the emotions that he goes through. Will it bring that team together?
I think it will, because this is a good group of guys. And one of the reasons I love covering this team is because of the character people. And that's, you know, a testament to the organization, David Poile, now Barry Trotz. They've been making such a priority of bringing those types of people in. And when you get into these types of situations, you know, I've been on teams where, you know, it might not be that big of a deal, or it's, hey, it's just another game, but this will be as important. We just went through Luke Shen's 1,000th game, and you could just see every single guy, the way that they embraced that whole thing. And he had his celebration against that Boston game, his stick presentation, and they played the best game that, you know, that they've played. So I think that that this will be a very important thing for a rallying point for the team to really just kind of galvanize. And, you know, Stamkos is their guy now, and really, you know, show their appreciation for how much they care about their new teammate and what he's done. And I know a lot of young players, you know, Andrew Burnett's talked on this. It's intimidating for a young player. All of a sudden, you know, you're getting a chance on the second line, a guy like Tommy Novak, and he's got future Hall of Famer, one of the most prolific goal scorers to ever play the game on his wing. And he's, you know, playing on a line with him and young players like Luke Evangelista. I remember playing with Paul Kariya. That's a big moment in a player's career. And now you get to go back and kind of celebrate him and see how, you know, everybody knows Stamkos is a Lightning. Everyone, what you guys probably thought the same thing when you saw him wearing a gold Predators jersey. It's like,
yep,
man, that's weird. It just, you know, you can't even, till you see it, you don't even know how it makes you feel when you first see it. It's just weird, you know? And I think this will be a good moment for the team to kind of come together, because we've all talked about it, but they'll actually get to experience it with him.
Well, Mace, this was great. I just wanted to ask you real quick, what is over your head? It looks like one of the coolest logos. It's like a beard thing with, what is that?
Yeah, that's my summer project, and it's coming. And I made that, so I'm going to see this through. I've started my own beard product, my beard oil line. It's called the Happy Beard Company, and it's not out yet, but it's getting there. So I've had a lot of fun doing that this summer. And that's one of the other things I do out here on the table, is make all my beard oil concoctions and try them out on myself. So it's coming soon. And, if you guys know any bearded, fellas out there, I'd be happy to send them a t-shirt and some product when I get it going.
Well, I got two questions for you. A, have you talked to Radko Gudas? And B, is that a take on Eddie from, Iron Maiden?
Oh, nice. I have that mask out here somewhere, I think. But no, it's just a design that I kind of made. It's kind of me with no skin and muscle and fat tissue in my face. I'm trying to model it after me a little bit. So, but yeah, you got some good beers. I got to hit up Jumbo Joe too. And and Burnsy in Carolina. I'll send him some, especially playoff time. They need some Happy Beard Oil.
Absolutely. I was going to say playoff time. Hey, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much for hopping on with us. All right.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Great stuff there, Sean, from Chris Mason. Love that he joined us. His backdrop was just terrific. And that interview was presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the National Hockey League. Sean, you're going to be heading over to Finland. And I mentioned that at the top of the show here. You're going to be heading over to Finland. You're going to be covering the Dallas Stars and the Florida Panthers. They're going to be playing in the Global Series presented by Fastenal in Finland. And I know you're excited. Paul Maurice has to be jazzed up, too. He's done this a few times, especially he's been to Finland a few times with teams. I was actually in Helsinki with him when he was coaching the Carolina Hurricanes, but he just got a contract extension, too. They're signing everybody in Florida. I mean, that's what happens when you win the Cup, right? You sign everybody. Reinhardt, Verhaeghe, now Paul Maurice. It's just funny, though, because it becomes big news when a coach gets a contract extension. It's big for the coach. It's kind of irrelevant, though, because if they start to falter – coach is the first to go, regardless of contract.
Yeah, but it's nice to know that you got that check coming.
Absolutely, if you're Paul Maurice.
Yeah, and it couldn't happen to a better guy. I mean, hockey lifer, you know, put in so much time before he won. You know, while we were both at the morning skate today, I was trying to talk to Anton Lundell about Finland and some stuff that we'll do as a sitting down with for Tuesday. Asked Paul Maurice a little bit about the trip to Finland, and, you know, just such a unique guy to talk to, and the way that he looks at things and the way that he's able to convey things. And I think it's going to be great. He's going over and they're playing Detroit, and him and Pete DeBoer are lifelong friends. So they're going to get to experience this together, and they'll be adversaries for the two games. But I would imagine before that, you know, there'll be some time that they can spend together and think about their journeys, right? And that's what it is for a lot of these players when they go over. You know, guys that aren't from there are like, oh, my God, I never thought that my hockey career would take me to these places. And then there's going to be seven Finns between the two teams. Barkov's going home to Tapper with the Stanley Cup. I can't think of anything greater. And for them, it's a homecoming, and it's a chance to play in the NHL where they never thought that would happen.
Yeah, they're playing Dallas. Just going to point that out. You said Detroit. But either way, you know. It's all right. You're going to Dallas.
You didn't hear they switched and Pete DeBoer became the coach of the Red Wings.
I want to let you know, Sean, you're going to Dallas before this. Just not Detroit. You're going to Dallas before this.
I think my jet lag just kicked kicked in.
Kicked in before you even left, right?
Well, from London last week, and I'm going to get rid of it tomorrow, and then it's going to kick back in with the 7-hour time change.
No, and there's a ton of Finns in this Global Series, too, which is great. And Paul Maurice mentioned that Alexander Barkov, who, by the way, should be back playing by then. Barkov obviously hurt in the second game of the season for the Panthers. Lower body injury, skating. He could play Saturday, if not looking like Monday. They leave Monday night from Buffalo after they play. He will play, unless there's a setback. He will play in these Global Series games against the Dallas Stars. So that's good. He's bringing the Stanley Cup, too. That's what Paul Maurice said. Barkov's getting a chance. The Stanley Cup will be there, apparently. I want you on the lookout for it.
The Stanley Cup will be there. It'll be in their plane, and it'll be all over Finland that week. But when he brings it to Tapperö, it's going to be unbelievable. I mean, he already did, you know, as part of the summer celebration. But you know, in season, it's going to be huge. And he's got a lot of pressure on him because, you know, Paul Maurice was talking about when he went over with Winnipeg, Patrick Laine scored a hat trick, and Anton Lundell was in the stands that day. He was telling me all about it. And then when I went 2 years ago, Mikko Rantanen scored a hat trick and was serenaded by the crowd. So one of the Finns has to score a hat trick here. I asked Lundell if he was going to get 4 goals, and he said, I don't know about that. I'm going to do my best. But maybe it'll be Barkov.
Maybe it'll be Nico Mikkola. You never know, right?
Defense could be.
That'd be great. Now, listen, and the Panthers, so I asked Paul Maurice this question because he's gone over at the start of the season the way the Buffalo Sabres and the New Jersey Devils did this year into Prague. With, you know, he's done that with the team. He's also gone over it this time and, you know, later in November, actually, and in an early November. He's done this a couple of times. When is the best time to do this? Like, what did he like most? And this is a good time for them to be going over, I think, for the Florida Panthers and the Dallas Stars. But speaking specific to the Florida Panthers, because we were talking to Maurice about this, this is a team that won the Stanley Cup, Sean, but there's a lot of different faces. You walked into that room this morning, Thursday morning, at Madison Square Garden. There's a lot of guys in there that were not on the ice when that final buzzer blew and to win the Stanley Cup last year in Game 7. So they've had training camp together. They've had the start of the season together. But now they get a 2-week trip after they get to know each other a little bit. And I think this is an interesting time for the Florida Panthers, and it's a critical time as well. But I think it's an interesting time for them to be going over, and I think it could really benefit them. You witnessed it, I think, when Tampa Bay did it, right? That time that Tampa Bay went over to Sweden, and that kind of changed their season, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, and I do. I you know, everybody's like, oh, they've been together for months, but they haven't. You know, they've spent a lot of time away from each other. You know, when they're home, they're not hanging out a ton. You know, and now you get to go on the road. And they're on the road for a long time. Paul Maurice said he packed 2 suitcases, one for the North American road trip they were doing and then one for the Finnish road trip that they're doing. So you know that's a long time when an NHL coach is packing 2 suitcases.
Yeah.
But this gives them a chance to bond, right? And I think that's important, and I think sometimes we overplay it. But, you know, again, it's going to give them a chance to kind of come together. And I think some of that comes into play is what we talked to Chris Mason about with Steven Stamkos going into Tampa Bay and the Predators rallying around that emotional moment that he's going to have. You know, again, Paul Maurice said today that the Panthers might be more excited than Barkov about him going home with the Stanley Cup and what that's going to mean to him. He's like, look, Barkey's excited. He's like, the team's over the moon. Like, they are so happy for their leader that he gets to experience this that I think it's a genuine, joyful moment, much like the Stanley Cup, that will bring them all together and knit those new players into it. This is something that they can all own together, and this will be the beginning of their story. I don't think they feel like their story's begun yet. They're playing these games, and I think the game against Boston, the 2 games against Boston, were a little bit of that, just because of the rivalry that they have and the dislike they have for each other. But this is going to be an opportunity for them to start writing their own story of the 2024-25 Florida Panthers.
Just make me the promise that when we do the podcast next week and you're in Finland, you're not doing it from the sauna.
No way, man. I'm not a sauna guy.
Okay, good. At least we got that. We got it recorded. There's a promise there.
There's a thrash metal bar there, though, but maybe I'll do it from there.
Will Batushka be playing?
Batushka will not be playing.
Listen, so you're going over to Finland, it's going to be a great trip, no question about it. I know you love it over there, too. Two good teams. I mean, this could be a preview of a Stanley Cup final. I mean, it really, really, really could be. It's very possible, in fact, that it could be. But moving on to a different topic, I wanted to ask you about the Colorado Avalanche, because I know they're the team you picked to win the Stanley Cup, and they got off to the really hard start. Are wins against Anaheim rebuilding, San Jose rebuilding, and Seattle, brand new coach, doesn't have a lot of offense, enough for you, for all of us to think that the Avalanche are back on track, or do they need more?
Well, I think they need more.
They obviously need more, but is it enough to convince you that they're on track again?
I feel a little better than I did a week ago, but they need more. They need their goaltender to settle down, you know. But let's talk for a minute about Cale Makar. It's early in the season, but he leads the league in points. Not leads defenseman in points. He leads the league in points. And he could become the first defenseman since Bobby Orr to reach 15 points in 7 games or less. There's only been 5. He would become the 5th, I believe, if he does it. Again, the first since Bobby Orr. And anytime you put Bobby Orr in a conversation, you're doing something really special. And the other 3 were from a different era of hockey. So, you know, to me, it's Cale Makar and Bobby Orr. And this isn't the first time they've been put in the same conversation. So, you know, I think we're seeing something special there. And like so many players, like a Crosby, like a MacKinnon, like a McDavid, it's so commonplace that we forget how good it is.
He's a unicorn, Makar. Like, I mean, because he's a big, rangy, powerful defenseman, great skater, great offensive, elite offensive instincts, elite defender. He's a unicorn, right? I mean, you got some other guys who are just terrific defensemen in the league right now. Quinn Hughes won the Norris Trophy last year, but he's not a big physical guy. He's a small guy. Adam Fox has won the Norris Trophy. Not a big physical guy. Roman Josi is probably the best comparable, but I think Makar is better than Josi, and it's not a knock on Josi. I mean, that's like saying, you know, McDavid's better than Draisaitl. You can argue it all day long. It's not a knock on Draisaitl if we're going to say that, right? I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying, you know, you're not knocking. Makar's a unicorn in that way, but they have to get the Avalanche, though, remain, even with a couple of wins, a team that's just so star-driven, right? I mean, MacKinnon's got to be going. Rantanen, got to be going. Makar's got to be going. It's almost as if one of them is off or two of them are off, the team doesn't have enough, Sean. It doesn't have enough. They are so star-driven. And you don't want to bring it up, but, like, you fear an injury, right? Like, what happens to this team if one of those three guys, really, if MacKinnon or Makar, and that's not to knock Rantanen. That's like saying, by the way, not a knock on Rantanen if you say McKinnon's better, right? But if one of these three guys get hurt, my God, like, that's my concern with the Avalanche. They're so top-heavy right now.
They're like the Edmonton Oilers were a couple of years ago before they built up their back, their third and fourth lines, and tried to address their defense a little. A very similar team, right? It was always yep. McDavid and Draisaitl and Nurse and what else, right? And Ken Holland fixed that to a degree, and they went deeper in the playoffs than they've ever been. I think that Colorado's going to continue to try and fix it on the fly, but they don't have a lot of flexibility in doing that, and they have a lot of question marks. You know, Landeskog, what happens with him? What happens with Nikushkin? All of these things, like, how do they make it better?
Well, you're not going into this season expecting either one of those guys there, but you know that they could return, so you got to make room for them. You got to plan for it, right? So that hampers them right now. That does. Lastly, Sean, before we get out of here, I just wanted to quickly touch on the Ottawa Senators. So the Ottawa Senators are off to a pretty good start right now, and it's not with Linus Ullmark in net. Linus Ullmark has only played in 2 games. He's out. He's got a muscle strain that has kept him out. But they've been good, and you do wonder
similar to the Wild and similar to the Capitals we talked about at the start of the season? Is it a sustainable start? Well, here's their next four games: Vegas, Colorado, St. Louis, New York Rangers. I got a feeling we're going to find out in the next week a heck of a lot about the Ottawa Senators.
The Ottawa Senators have a lot of good pieces. I think if you took the Ottawa Senators roster and you put it up against some of the rosters in the East, you'd have a tough time picking which roster you wanted to have. But their roster only works when they try and when they put that physical effort and when Tkachuk is driving them, right? When they're engaged and they're in the battle, that's when they're good. When they're going through the motions, like they have a lot of skill, but it's not accomplished skill that can go through the motions. Like the Edmonton Oilers can go through the motions at time, and they have so much skill it doesn't really matter. Ottawa's not there. If they're not putting in an honest day's work, they're not getting an honest day's pay.
Well, I mean, and that comes down to understanding how to win in this league. They're going through a process of figuring that out. The Buffalo Sabres have been trying to figure it out for years, right? How do you win in this league? The Edmonton Oilers figured it out, right? Colorado Avalanche figured it out. The Florida Panthers figured it out. To a degree, the Tampa Bay Lightning, even though they've been good for a long time, figured it out, right? How do you win in this league when you are trying to step up a level? Ottawa looks like it's starting to figure it out. And that's a great sign for them. And the fact that they're doing it without the guy they signed to be their number one goalie only makes it better, because when he's back, that means they're going to be that much better.
Yeah, they will. And I think a lot of it, again, falls on Brady and his ability to kind of lead that team. You know, it's funny. He spent so much time around his brother winning the cup and going deep into the playoffs last year. And you're like, oh, well, that's nice. It's not only nice, it's a learning lab, right? He got to see up close what it takes. And I don't think anybody understands what it takes until you experience it, right? So he still hasn't experienced it, but he's been close enough to his brother that he has a real good idea of what it takes. And I'm sure Matthew is telling him all the time about all the decisions he made and all the things that he gave up, you know, whether it's points or whether it's accolades or whatever it might be, to be where he is and to be on that stage that he ended up on for the last 2 years. And that sinks in a lot faster when you're experiencing it than when somebody is telling you about it.
Yeah, listen, I like Ottawa a lot. I had the number 10 in my Super 16 this week, by the way. I had them at 10.
You are reactionary, my friend.
Yeah, no, you didn't even have him in, by the way.
You're chasing stocks.
Nah, not reactionary. I like what I've seen from them so far. But anyway, listen, we'll see where they are next week. We know where you're going to be next week. You will be in Finland, and we will be doing this podcast with you abroad next week. Again, like I said, don't do it in a sauna. That is the only thing I ask. You could do it, you know, while eating venison if you'd like.
It's reindeer, buddy. Don't try and sugarcoat it.
Yeah, reindeer. Yeah. Too gamey for me. But anyway.
A little salmon soup, maybe. Anton Lundell was selling me on the salmon soup today, so I gave that a try, and I was iffy. I might have to find a better place to do it and give it another whirl. There's so much good food there. People are like, oh, Finland, now what are you going to eat? Like, that's never an issue.
No, you find it anyway. You'll find the good food wherever you go. Anyway, this was a lot of fun. We'll do it again next week. Again, it's the NHL at the Rink, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. Enjoy the hockey.